Do you want to make a difference in the world?
And see the lives of the people of India and all internationals transformed with the gospel?
As India goes, all Asia will go with.
Living the Dream podcast provides tools for you to pray, give, and go
as you become an active participant in the Great Commission
and help your church's demographic represent the demographic of your community.
Get ready to find your strategy for reaching your community and changing the world here at Living the Dream podcast with your host, Pastor Kevin.
Good morning. I'm Pastor Kevin, founder and executive director of Global Hope India, and your host for Living the Dream podcast. This is where the church gathers to mobilize in order to effectively reach the community and change the world, including all the foreign-born internationals moving into our communities. I interview today's top church leaders from around the world so we can learn all we can about reaching internationals with the gospel and partnering with them in the Great Commission. It's time the church has this conversation. Go to globalhopeindia.org/resources for tools for your success. Now, let's jump into today's show.
Before we dive into today's show, let me just explain to you why James is one of my heroes. I am so thankful to have him on the show today. James has actually been pursuing God for many years, but now focused on the mission of reaching internationals for Christ. And he will share with you his story and how they met various roadblocks which required them to come back from South Asia over to the USA, and yet he still will not allow that to deter him from the mission. And he is now ingrained in ministry right here in North Carolina. Will you please welcome my hero and your soon friend, James, to Living the Dream podcast.
Thank you very much, Kevin. It's a real pleasure to be with you today.
Yeah. I've been looking forward to this interview. We've tried to schedule it a while back and that didn't work out. And so I'm really thankful, even in the midst of this global pandemic, that we're able to do this interview. How are you doing?
Yeah, we're doing really well. We've just been getting used to the new normal like everybody else. So we have four kids, and both Elizabeth and I have been working from home, and kids are in homeschool now. So it's been fun getting used to this new challenge. Of course, we just love being able to be at home with our kids
Sure.
so much.
Well, that is a great blessing, silver lining in the midst of this global shutdown that we are involved in. What are your thoughts and prayers as you think about the world at the moment? We're safe in the USA. This is being recorded. We have audience from around the world, but we are safe in the USA, Mooresville, North Carolina. But obviously, our hearts are going out to our neighbors across the ocean in need. Many countries, we think of India and other South Asia countries, are really suffering at the moment. What are you seeing, and how are you praying for the world at the moment?
Yeah, that's really, really good. Yeah, this will probably come out in our interview, but just like my wife and I, our family, we've just had a huge heart for the people of South Asia, mm-hmm. India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Nepal for over a decade now. And we lived in that part of the world for a few years. And so we've really been keeping our ear to the ground with what's been going on in that part of the world. And it's just been heartbreaking, really, just seeing really not so much like the virus itself, but like right. the lockdown in yeah. each of these countries and just how dramatic that's been, especially for the part of South Asia that we used to live in, where there's a lot of poverty. There's literally people like starving, haven't eaten for 10 days plus. And we've been keeping in touch with a lot of our friends, former coworkers in that region, and just hearing just these terrible tales of families, this entire family is just committing suicide because they haven't eaten in so long. And so we've been praying specifically for that part of the world and helping raise support and send support. It's just been so amazing. Like some of our partners over there, the church is just on the move now in that part of South Asia that we lived in. And I've really heard similar stories from all over, where just the believers are just going out and they've been getting food to the villagers, people that haven't eaten in a while. So and then all the while they're sharing the hope of the bread of life of Jesus Christ with them as well. So it's been, you know, there's you said silver lining. There's definitely, it's a terrible, terrible situation what's going on around the world, but there certainly are several silver linings out there. And just getting to see, as we're talking about, thy kingdom come, right, through this interview, and being a good neighbor, really a lot of great stories of just people in that part of the world, but worldwide, just really being a good neighbor, loving their neighbor as they love themselves.
Yeah, we are ultimately praying for a spiritual awakening as a result of this. You know, I remember 9/11 and how sobering it was to the USA. And I remember even before that, how the HIV virus was sobering to Africa and a lot of those countries in and around South America. And, you know, now that we're faced with a global pandemic, there's no one on the planet that is not being touched by this. They're knowing someone that's lost their jobs or lost a loved one. They're being impacted financially. And we know that God's always on the move. And sometimes it takes a moment of pain and suffering to really begin to prioritize what matters most. And so we're praying that many of the people that we've loved for all these years would really look up and see Jesus in these moments and know that John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he sent his one and only son, that whoever would believe in him would not perish, but would have everlasting life. Yeah, the church is rallying right now. We got pictures today from our partner in Chennai that went from Chennai, Tamil Nadu, trying to go up into Andhra Pradesh to help feed the poor there, and they were stopped at the border. And so pastors from Andhra Pradesh came to the border, took the food from the pastors of Tamil Nadu. And you just can't comprehend that living in the States. It's like us trying to leave North Carolina and we drive to South Carolina and you can't cross the border. You cannot go into another state. Yet the church from one state is now giving food to a church in another state so that they can have an outreach of the gospel. And that's just one example of the goodness of God that's occurring. And that was made possible from believers in the USA that helped buy those groceries for the believers in India to be able to survive in this moment and thrive by being able to be the hands and feet of Jesus.
So, praise God for that.
Yeah. So James, you're my hero. As you just shared, you've been really focused for over 10 years on the friends from South East Asia. And we're going to dive into that, but let's get to know James. So one random fact I understand is that you are a diehard Boston Red Sox fan. How did that happen?
Yeah. So my dad's from right outside of Boston.
Okay.
A town called Worcester.
Yeah. Does he have the accent and everything?
He doesn't any longer.
You want some coffee?
All my family, all my dad's side of the family up there. They just really serious Boston accent, you know, and
I just heard it in you.
My grandparents have since passed, but you know, aunts and uncles still up there, but ever since I was a little kid, man, just, and that was in during the the very difficult era to be a Red Sox fan, you know, the 80s and the 90s, you know.
But that takes a true fan, you know.
Yeah. And so the only time I've really ever witnessed my grandfather crying was in 2004 when the Red Sox won the World Series. And he was 1 year old when they last won it back in 1918. So, So that's, it's good. Boston's strong.
Right? So it goes deep, very deep. I can tell. Let's allow our listeners to just play Two Truths and a Lie. And I just want everyone to guess, and then we're going to let James tell us. Has James lived in four countries? Is he a UNC Tar Heel fan? or does he speak Hindi and Urdu? So, James, which one is the lie?
I am definitely not a UNC Chapel
I wondered about that. I'm like, you know, Boston, I'm sure there's some Boston Red Sox, and I know that that's baseball, but it just seems, you know, if you're going to be that strong in the Boston Red Sox market, that you would have somehow a divided house in liking the UNC Tar Heels. So you're definitely not a Tar Heel fan.
Well, yeah, it's not really my New England roots there, but we've lived in North Carolina since, or had ties in North Carolina since 95.
Okay.
Have you picked an ACC school? Oh yeah, for a number of years, and I've even been a student. My wife actually graduated, and my sister graduated from NC State University. Go Pack! And of course, we've had some bad years here lately, but actually, we're kind of like
bad years related to sports. Okay, it's a great school, yeah, academically.
It's a great school. Oh yeah,
we have 1,000 of our friends from India going to school there, even right now. But yeah, unfortunately, whenever it comes to athletics, they have broken a lot of records recently. So
it might be a good thing that we're taking a season off.
Yeah, another silver lining in the midst of this.
Yeah, maybe.
Let's get to know James. Just tell us about your journey of faith, and how did God position you to have such a big heart for the people of Asia?
Yeah, so I wasn't raised in a Christian family. Actually, my other side of my family, my mother's family, is from the UK. So I was born in the UK, lived there till I was almost 10 when we finally immigrated, I guess, across the pond and came to America. And but I was not raised in a Christian family. It was more, well, at least not a evangelical born again family. We were Anglican, Episcopal. Hardly ever went to church, never read the Bible, never prayed really, unless we like really needed something, and especially never heard the gospel. And so like, yeah, just kind of grew up to fall in love with the world. And that was kind of my parents' aim, their goals of life, you know, the kind of American dream, I guess. And so, but I went off the deep end, got into drug abuse and a lot of bad stuff as a teenager and then a young adult. But you know, I heard the gospel, and just God saved me out of that background. And then as I was discipled, as I started going to church, was discipled, just really it didn't take long for me to catch a heart for evangelism, sharing the gospel. Like, to me, it was very real. It's like, if somebody didn't share the gospel with me, not only would my life, you know, still be in the gutter where it was, but if I died today, like I would spend an eternity apart from the presence of God. And so sharing the gospel for me was kind of like a paying it forward kind of thing, or passing the baton. And so it was very early on in my walk with Christ that I started just getting involved with like evangelism, ministries through our church, you know, just door to door evangelism a lot of times. And as I did that more and more, you know, just, and as I really studied the scriptures more, first from the scriptures, I realized, you know, God has a heart for the nations, you know, Matthew 28, you know, go and make disciples of all nations.
Sure.
Acts 1:8, you know, and the gospel will go to the ends of the earth. And so there was that from the scriptures. But then from my experience, like so many of the houses that we're knocking on, or just, you know, in the small town that I lived in North Carolina, just knowing that there's like, you know, most of the homes that we you know, knocked on, they had some kind of exposure to Jesus. They might not be a follower of Jesus, but they've heard the gospel before. And there were churches almost on every street corner. And so, you know, wrestling with the scriptures and knowing that there are parts of the world that don't have, you know, Christians like every other door, or churches on every other street corner, but there are places in the world that to this day have little to no exposure to the gospel. We started, this was even before I met my wife. I just started praying about missions, started getting involved with just doing short-term mission trips, and you know, just going to several different countries through that. And then I met my wife, and just we were just praying, you know, like, here I am, Lord, send me. We just wanted to go to wherever the need was the greatest in the world. I don't know if you've ever seen this map. It's a great, great graphic called the Global Status of Evangelical Christianity, where it really just kind of shows you color coded, like where the needs are the greatest in the world. Wherever it's green, you know, that means they've got a fairly large gospel concentration. Wherever it's red, it's like little to no gospel concentration. And if you look at that map, the one glaring thing that you see on that map is that South Asia, like India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Nepal, Bhutan, that area of the world, it's like deep red,
bright red.
And yeah, actually many people that have served in South Asia, have a heart for it, will, you know, from that map say India or South Asia is bleeding, you know, when you look at that map. And it's not only per capita, but it's also like unreached people groups in that area. Like there's, India has more distinct like ethno-linguistic groups than any other region of the world, where they self-identify as a separate people or a separate language. India has more unreached people groups, or South Asia has more unreached people groups than any other region of the world. So anyways, we saw that map. We had been getting involved in international student ministry, actually at NC State. A lot of internationals, a lot of Indians, especially even back then, that was like 12 years ago. And then so we ended up having a vision trip, 2009, went to South Asia, got to, I mean, it was just an eye opener for us, and it confirmed that calling for us. And then 2012 to 2015, we were blessed, had the privilege of living there for 3 years. And we had every intention of staying longer. Our twins were born there in South Asia. It was just a very, very difficult pregnancy. They were born 3 months early. They had a lot, they had and still have some complications to this day. And my wife had some complications through it. So we decided to kind of take a hiatus. And after they were born, we decided to come back to the U.S. for a little while to kind of get our bearings straight. And it was in while we were here, 2016, my wife had a heart attack. And so that just, for us, at least for this season of our life, just closed the door for us going back overseas. But it didn't take away our calling and our love for internationals, but for the people of South Asia in particular. And so we're from the triangle, the Raleigh-Durham side of North Carolina, and very aware of the fact that, you know, here in the Research Triangle Park, like Morrisville, Apex, West Cary, South Durham, that we have very thriving, actually one of America's most thriving, largest Indian communities and South Asian communities right here. So we decided, let's just continue to, you know, love our Indian neighbors as we love ourselves, and let's just move to the heart of it. So we moved to 2016. So now we've finished 4 years. We've been living here in Morrisville, and just trying to like let our light shine among our South Asian neighbors here. But also I work with the State Baptist Convention on a team called People's Next Door. And so we work with our local churches to try to help give them a stronger passion for, help them think through ways that they can better welcome, better befriend, show love and kindness, and really get to the gospel with our South Asian community here. And so, yeah, so we're living it ourselves, but we're also trying to mobilize other believers to do the same as well.
That's beautiful. What age were you when you moved to the USA?
I was almost 10, fourth grade.
All right. And what is your citizenship status now?
I am I'm dual citizen of both the United Kingdom and the USA.
Was that by birth, or did you have to transition that later?
That was by birth.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Because like either of my parents are citizens, and my mom actually didn't become an American citizen until just like a few years ago. She still holds both as well.
Yeah. So has your English always been as good as it is today? Like when you were 10 coming over, did you have any language barrier as far as speaking the Queen's English versus the American English or anything?
You know, not really language barrier, but that, you know, a couple, you know, words that I would pronounce differently or say, and so that was really hard, actually. Kids all over the world can be just so mean to anybody who's different. Sure. You know,
and so diving right into it in middle school,
yeah,
that's got to be painful.
And so I think that's, you know, although like British culture and American culture isn't so different, but because it's different enough, like I did encounter some bullying, and you know, people like, and especially people come over to my house, they hear my mom talk and she's got a British accent, and you know, they'd, you know, make fun of me, and all the way really up through high school, you know, people would, yeah, make fun of me. So anyways, that's really helped me be able to empathize with foreigners that have moved over here that have actually much bigger barriers to cross than just from England to America. If it's that bad for someone who coming from England to America, how much worse is it for someone coming from India, from China, where, you know, English isn't even a first language,
right? Yeah.
You know, wherever.
Yeah. And that was my point in asking the question, because I'm beginning to understand the genius of God, that he would bring someone like you, that you know what it's like to be far from God. You also know what it's like to be a minority. You know what it's like have to make adjustments to be at home in the USA. You have this calling on your life now to be a neighbor to those foreigners that are coming into the US. And I sympathize with your story as far as the struggle of your twins and the health scare of your wife. But I'm grateful that you had that opportunity to go and live where they live. And you can say the three most powerful words of any Christian in the U.S. whenever it comes to love thy neighbor, and that is, I've been there. And that you can even say, I've lived there, which is incredibly awesome. You know, I did a study not too long ago of the number of passport holders in the USA. Over 50% of America hold passports. But when you drill down the international travel out of the USA by American passport holders, and you begin to eliminate all the major tourist destinations, Canada and Mexico, it falls like into the teens, the number of people that have actually gone abroad. And then when you rule out Europe and Paris and London, all the fancy sites and different places, you get down to less than 1% of Americans that have ever been to Southeast Asia, and you've lived there. And you know, God is just so wise to give you that experience, even though now you might feel some limitation about being able to go back. But he's bringing the mission field now to you and really poised you and positioned you to relate to them. And I just love that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the second greatest commandment, love your neighbor as you love yourself, or the golden rule, you know, do unto others as you've had done to yourself. Like, it's easy to say that, but like, until you've actually been in their shoes, like you've actually been the minority, like where for our time, you know, living in South Asia for those 3 years, like, yeah, we were just completely dependent on our South Asian friends to help us and take care of us and make sure that we're getting, you know, getting the support that we need. And so, so we've received that kind of, support and love. And so now, you know, on the flip side, we're like, okay, we've got a lot of internationals coming in, a lot of immigration to North Carolina. North Carolina is like always at the top five, you know, states for largest, immigration. And it's actually, I think, number one for like largest growth over the last decade. It doesn't necessarily mean more people, but it means that the growth percentage is greater in North Carolina than a lot of other states.
Yeah.
And so when we're having so many come to us, like for us that we've experienced it. And so we know like what it means to like love someone as you love yourself. Like when you, like you want to, you know, you want to feel care and compassion when you're the foreigner, you're the minority in that other context. And so once you've felt that, like you can better understand how you can do the same for when you're like the host culture, so to speak.
This is sort of a interesting question, but do you feel like God's punished you by giving you the assignment to go abroad and make yourself a foreigner like that and put you in an environment? You know, most Americans don't have to stretch their imagination to see we are so comfortable here. And when you start thinking of going to South Asia, you're dropping your comfort level tremendously. Do you feel like God had something against you to, you know, like we have those stereotypes of, you know, God, if you'll just bail me out, I'll be a missionary. And it's almost like, you know, we think of missions as a punishment, as you know, sort of a deal we have to make with God in order to survive. My point is, I'm sure you see the direct opposite, and you see that somehow by the grace of God, you've been chosen and blessed beyond, you know, most of the billionaires in the USA probably don't know the level of meaning and purpose to their life the way that you and your wife have. Just speak to that for a moment. Don't let me put words in your mouth. You can feel free to say, I'm not so blessed by my past or whatever you want to say.
No. You're definitely not putting words in my mouth, but I mean, I completely agree that it was this, an extreme privilege for us to have been able to spend those years overseas. And, I wouldn't trade it for the world. In no way do I look at it as even a sacrifice, but definitely not a punishment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess some people would look at it as a sacrifice. But it was there were obviously difficulties. I mean, we got sick a lot, you know, language barriers, and there's, you know, difficulties. I think anybody go, you know, moving cross culturally, even if you're moving into, you know, the first world, there's still going to be difficulties that you'll encounter, language barriers and things like that. So there's always difficulties, but I would definitely say the experience that we had, the friendship that we made. I mean, some of our deepest friendships in the world are those that we made in our years living in South Asia. And to this day, by God's grace, he's allowed us to come back at a time where we've got, you know, beautiful things like WhatsApp and WeChat to keep those relationships alive. I mean, even just 10 years ago, that was almost unthinkable. And now, my friends, everybody has a smartphone, even though they're the poorest of the poor. Mm-hmm. A lot of them, they've got smartphones, and I'm able to, keep in touch with them.
That's great.
And so, something I was going to say earlier, I thought that your question was going to be, do you feel like you were punished that you had to come back to America? Mm-hmm. But I thought that's the direction you were going to go. Uh-huh. I was going to say earlier, you know, when because we had put so much of, or I especially, not so much my wife, but I especially put so much of my identity in my, you know, going and living overseas, that when the Lord really first closed that door for us to go back in 2016, I was really confused. I was angry. I was like, man, we've given so much. We've invested so much. We had just got the green light to return as, you know, full career workers. We had completed all of the criteria for our first term, and by God's grace, completed our language requirements, all of that. And then it's like, right as you've completed all of those things, right as you get the green light to come back for your second career term, the Lord closes the door. Mm-hmm. And I felt really confused about that at first, but as time progressed and we started moving into this role of serving here in RTP and really throughout North Carolina and other parts that have larger South Asian communities, like Charlotte, for example, I realized that, you know, my experience, you know, as a child living overseas until I was 10, and then our experience, living overseas for those 3 years in South Asia, I realized that God was, all of that was preparing us for a time such as this, to do it ourselves, to love our international neighbors here in North Carolina, but really to mobilize the church to do so as well. Because really, when we first when we first moved into Morrisville, there's only one other family who was that we knew of, the Christian family that was living here intentionally, just to do that very thing, mm-hmm. To let their light shine. They wanted to move to South Asia, because of health reasons as well. They couldn't do it. So they said, well, Morrisville is right down the road. Let's just move there. And they actually moved, and they were living in Cary. But there was only that one other family. So here we were, just the second family. But by God's grace, over the last 4 years since we've been here, we've more than doubled, the number of people that are living here intentionally, and are continuing to, to see, families and even single people just move either here to the RTP, or we've even got some moving intentionally over near NC State, in the neighborhoods where we have a lot of international students that study there at Centennial Campus at NC State. And they're living in the same neighborhoods as the students, and they're just living life on life with them and just being a good neighbor. Mm-hmm. And so at first I thought it was punishment, God bringing us back, but I've seen that, he's prepared us for a time such as this.
Yeah, I'm so glad you shared that. I'd love you just to continue. You began articulating, but what are you seeing God do today, just in general, as it relates to reaching our neighbors, our foreign-born friends?
Yeah. Well, yeah, just kind of, tying in with my last comment, we are seeing a lot more awareness mm-hmm. in the churches. Mm-hmm. Yeah, where, a lot of the churches, that are here in our Research Triangle Park area, a lot of them were, traditional old churches that were, the farming communities that were here previously. And I mean, Morrisville used to just be a big farm, really. And so the explosive growth over the last 15, 20 years, especially here in Morrisville, and just all of this, the international community that God has brought here, almost 40% of Morrisville is, the households are foreign born, or the children of foreign born, mm-hmm. almost 40%. There's not many other parts of North Carolina where you could say that. And so it really, I think at first, a lot of these churches, and talking to the pastors and the leadership, when they're honest, they're like, yeah, like at first we were really kind of thrown back, and just kind of looked at it as I don't want to say invasion, but the culture was changing so much, and there was a little bit of fear and hesitation to really engage the, mm-hmm. the community. But what we're seeing is a lot more the pastors and leadership and believers within the church are saying, no, we really want to welcome our international neighbors. We really want to do a better job at sharing the love of Jesus with them through physical acts of love, and then just share with them the hope of Jesus that they've had in their life. So I think we still have a long way to go, but I think we've definitely made some really good baby steps in the right direction.
Yeah.
So that's one thing from the church perspective, and then two, just from the community's perspective, we've just seen so many just amazing relationships, just ourselves, but also through others that we've been able to work with, either church partners or just mm-hmm. People that have kind of joined our team. And it's just so great to see these deep friendships, mm-hmm. To be an advocate for them. And in our community, in our neighborhood, I think that the fact that Elizabeth and I are kind of that bridge culture, we've really earned the trust and friendship of many of our neighbors. And actually there was just a history in our neighborhood of the HOA, almost entirely, Anglo for the duration of the HOA, and the policies always kind of being intolerant of those who were minorities in the community, even though our community is really, it's not even right to call them minorities, because it's in our community, it's minority majority is I would say 50% of my neighbors are at least foreign born. Mm-hmm. India, Nepal, Palestinians, mm-hmm. Puerto Ricans, all, you name it, like Africans living here, like, and so with neighbors that we had befriended, they just would share, you know, just some of the ways that they felt like their needs, their voice wasn't being heard. Mm-hmm. And so they had actually, several of my neighbors had like last year asked me to throw my name in the hat for the HOA board. Mm-hmm. And which is one thing I told, you know, told my friends before I would never do, but I was just like, you know, like if you think this, you know, this will be good for the community, then I'll be happy to do that. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I really just see myself as a bridge. And just in the 1 year that I've been doing it, there's been so many times like where there's been, yeah, like conflict between neighbors. And the moment like I'll read the letter from the property manager, I'll say, I'll just immediately say to the group, oh, this sounds to me like cross-cultural misunderstanding. And usually like there's one other Anglo on the group, and she was one of the old guard. And she would always say, oh no, this isn't cultural. It's not cultural. And I'll be like, I don't know. Like, let's go visit and let's go hear it from the horse's mouth. And, and then every last time it would be like just a cultural misunderstanding. Like, but like before, they were only hearing like the one side. They were looking at everything like monoculturally, because all cultures, we just have like different ways of doing things and different ways of looking at right and wrong and being a good neighbor. And a lot of times it was just like some of our neighbors, like the most recent situation, this guy, he barely speaks any English. He's actually a priest at one of our local Hindu temples.
Okay.
Yeah. And they were like cooking every day, like cooking these meals and these huge meals for the temple from his home and delivering them. And they were like feeding the community through it. And the neighbor next door is kind of like actually spying on them, really, and just like taking pictures of them and like thinking that they're like running a restaurant out of there. Mm-hmm. And anyways, like we just go down there, we talk to them, and they smoothed it over so well. And we just kind of shared with that Indian neighbor. We just kind of shared with him like just a few tips on, you know, like they were leaving their pots and pans out on their back porch. And that was one of the big things. And which is actually, that's why I said it was cultural, because I remember living in South Asia. And that was like, you know, you're doing a big, big meal that, you know, you just leave it outside and then you wash it later, you know, and it's very normal. And you've probably seen that all your times going in.
Yes.
And that's exactly what he was doing. And we just kind of, you know, lightly suggested, yeah, maybe in the future, just don't leave it out there and just wash it. He didn't need like his neighbor like snooping on him and causing conflict. He just needed somebody to come alongside of him and to really help him understand the way things are. But I think the default for a lot of people is they see things that they don't like, and they just immediately divert to conflict. And we see that on Nextdoor all the time. I can't stand reading the posts on Nextdoor, because it's always like just people just want to stir up the pot. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those misunderstandings I've seen on Nextdoor from Morrisville are, I would say that a majority of them are just cross-cultural misunderstandings. So if we can just like better as a host culture understand like what the cultural differences are, and rather than just throwing stones, just go and have conversations with our neighbor. And that's exactly what being a good neighbor is about. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. Mm-hmm. Put yourself in their shoes. If you were in their country and you didn't know what the cultural, things were, like, you would want somebody to teach you.
Yeah.
And so let's do that as well. So I'm kind of rambling, but that's
No, I'm very glad.
That's a win.
Because you're offering very practical description. And, you know, you haven't one time said you need to have a big King James Bible. It needs to weigh 10 pounds. You go and you start thumping it in their front yard and you start preaching to them about their need for a savior. What you're really describing is something far greater than that. Not that's wrong if that's what God's called you to, but you're really describing, you know, the attitude of Christ, the grace-filled heart of our Lord and Savior. And if we're listening to this podcast and we think, why is there such an emphasis on love thy neighbor? Everybody's welcoming. Oh, no, they're not. Unfortunately, the vast majority of people really look at strange and become defensive over it or threatened by it. And there's just a world of difference from being born in the USA and being born in India. And those differences can appear to be strange at times, and they can become threatening. And we can, instead of being inviting, instead of being welcoming, we can be transactional instead of relational, like what you described, even about the pots on the back porch. Dealing with that in a transactional way could have become very unfriendly, but it was handled in a relational way that was really honoring God and opens up that neighbor to the faith that God has implanted within us.
And now, a story from the mission field.
In one of my tours over to India, we had a short break and we were able to go up into the mountain ranges of northern India, and we flew into Chandigarh and then took a taxi up to Manali. And that was about an 8-hour journey to just go maybe 100 miles through the winding mountains. And when we got up to Manali, we started seeing a opportunity that we could possibly fly using chopper from Manali down to Chandigarh. Everything was incredibly difficult to even get the information to where we would even know if this would be a legitimate form of transportation or not. But it all came together and we are there, and we had a flight out of Chandigarh to go back to the mainland part of India for another team to arrive. And the morning of that flight, we then go over to the local airport and we're going to take this chopper. Except everyone is fine, and we are beginning to load up, and they are like, we do not have permission to take a foreigner, and I'm the only foreigner on this particular flight. The chopper has to arrive at a military section of the Chandigarh airport. And so there was great panic as they were trying to figure everything out as to getting permission. And this would require a lengthy process that would take weeks to get the permit for the foreigner to be able to land on the military side of the Chandigarh airport. And they made some calls, and they had already sold me my ticket, and everything was, in my mind, lined up to be able to go. But I was facing the reality that in any moment they were going to say, no way, you cannot fly. And that was going to mean an 8-hour journey over to Chandigarh, where we would now have missed a flight into mainland India. And within about 45 minutes of stressful waiting, pacing the airport, praying, wondering what was going to happen, all of a sudden they said, let's go. And they escorted me out with the rest of the group and loaded us up in the chopper. And 35 minutes later, we are landing in the Chandigarh airport. And then they are rolling the chopper over to the commercial side, and we unload the chopper and make our way into the Chandigarh airport.
We want to give some local love to our friends at Globus Medical, located in Audubon, Pennsylvania. Globus leads in innovation and musculoskeletal solutions. They are focused on the design, development, and commercialization of products like the Excelsius GPS, one of the only spinal surgery robots on the market today. We recognize their founder and executive chairman, David Paul, not just because he is an American businessman born in India, but also for his love for God and generosity for missions. Check out their website at globusmedical.com.
Help turn Kevin's new book, Audacious Generosity, into a reality.
Are you ready to move?
This global pandemic has brought the whole world to a screeching halt. Rest assured, God is on the move. Aren't you glad Jesus is an ever-present help in time of need? What about people far from God? Where do they turn in the midst of these global challenges? God has a plan named Jesus.
I believe God's strategy has always been audacious generosity.
For God so loved the world that he gave Jesus. Audacious generosity is where you allow God to be kind and plentiful through you.
As believers, we have the richest, most generous person in the world living inside of us.
Are you ready to move?
I want to invite you to join me in a movement of audacious generosity, a movement where God is the giver and giving depends on what God gives through you. A movement where we don't just read about the miracles in the Bible, like the feeding of the multitude, but we witness modern day miracles in our own hands. A movement where believers around the world unite to fulfill the Great Commission.
A movement where you experience, receive, and give more than you ever thought possible. Are you ready to move?
God led me to write Audacious Generosity just for you. It's a timely message and response to these global challenges.
I'm Kevin White. I would like for you to be a backer by pledging your support. Funds will be used to publish Audacious Generosity, making it available on Amazon and around the world.
Join me to launch a movement the world is literally dying to see.
Are you ready to move?
Check it out now at globalhopeindia.org/book. That's globalhopeindia.org/book. Thanks for pledging your support. Know your numbers. Maybe you've seen the show Shark Tank, and you've seen the business owners come in to pitch to the sharks and explain why they're the right person to execute the vision for their business. Well, we believe that you are the right person to execute the vision for your church, and you need to know your numbers.
It's important to know your numbers. Every number is a soul. Every soul is a creation of God. So I want you to check out these stats of the birthplace of foreign-born populations living in the USA today. In 1990, there was 4 million people from Mexico. Today, there's over 12 million. In 1990, there was less than 1 million people from China living in the USA. Today, there's over 3 million. In 1990, there was not even 500,000 Indian nationals living in the USA. Today, there is over 2.5 million. In 1990, there was 1 million people from the Philippines living in the USA. Today, there's 2 million. In 1990, there was less than 500,000 people from El Salvador living in the USA. Today, there's 1.5 million. In 1990, there was a little over 500,000 people from Vietnam living in the USA. Today, 1.5 million people from Vietnam live here in the USA. And I could go on and on. In 1990, there was 600,000 people from South Korea living in the USA. It now exceeds over 1 million people. In 1990, there were less than 350,000 people from the Dominican Republic. Today, it exceeds 1 million people. My point is, this is an incredible reason and opportunity for the church to have an identifiable and measurable strategy to reach these beautiful friends that are foreign-born internationals living in our communities today.
James, what's your take? So you've done a good job describing how Mooresville, North Carolina, and this is not unique just to North Carolina. Yes, we lead the country, but states all over the U.S. are filling up with foreign-born internationals. What's your take on that as far as how it relates to what the Bible shows us in Revelation 7, 9 through 12 about how this story is going to end with every nation, every tribe, every tongue worshiping Jesus together in heaven. What's your thoughts on God's sovereign plan to fulfill the Great Commission?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I've got my Bible here. There's scriptures I could use to really just kind of point to really like our ethos as we're serving here. Like one that we just really just honestly, like we have like the Great Commission, like Matthew 28, Acts 1:8. And just right along that with what we're doing here in North America, I usually just add this verse to just kind of show how really the Great Commission is, yes, we are to go to the ends of the earth, but we do it in our Jerusalem and our Judea as well. And what we're seeing is that God is bringing the ends of the earth to us at this time. And so Acts 17:26, And he, and God made from one man, Adam, every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling place, that they should seek God in the hope that they might feel their way toward him and find him. Yet he is not, he is actually not far from each one of us. Mm-hmm. So that passage says, and this is Paul, he's in Athens. This is his famous Mars Hill address. And what he says in that passage is that God is sovereign. When it says he has determined allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling place, what that teaches us is that God is sovereign over the migration of peoples. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, we still have a call to go to the ends of the earth. And, you know, we still have a call to go to South Asia, to go to East Asia, wherever the needs are the greatest. And there's still so many needs, and we still need to be sending long-term missionaries, cross-cultural workers. I still don't think we're sending enough, honestly. It's such a small percentage of believers who do go full-time. But we're still called to go. But what we're seeing is from some of those countries where it's actually the hardest to get into, like it might be geographical reasons. Like you think of like, oh, we've had so many Nepalis coming here. I've befriended this sweet couple from Nepal. They're actually from the Himalayas. Mm. Like they're from this really remote village. And so, man, praise God, they've come here, and we've been able to develop a friendship with them. Mm-hmm. And we're just sharing stories about Jesus with them, and sharing the gospel with them, and just living life on life with them as best as we can. Mm-hmm. But like, who knows? Like, I don't know if a missionary has ever been to their village before. And so, you know, because it's like so remote, like mm-hmm. where they're from. Mm-hmm. And here they are, like they've come to us. Or it might be political reasons. Like some countries, we have a lot of Yemenis, you know, like Yemen is still in a terrible civil war right now, or Syria. Geopolitical reasons, we can't get into those countries right now. It's you're literally putting your life at danger, and yet we've got Yemenis, Syrians, coming to us, especially Syrians in droves. We have an opportunity to love them right here in our own backyard. Or it might actually be in some countries illegal to share the gospel. Mm-hmm. Saudi Arabia, for example, like you share with a Saudi, like you could literally lose your life for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For an American, you'll probably the worst that will happen is you'll get kicked out of the country. They don't want to step on America's toes. Mm-hmm. But if you're like Saudi on Saudi, mm-hmm. literally like it's capital punishment.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got Saudi, like the third or fourth largest number of international students in America are from Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not legal to share the gospel with them in Saudi Arabia, but here we have an opportunity right here
yes.
to mm-hmm. share with them in our home country.
Yeah.
So I think in a lot of ways, God is allowing us to continue to fulfill the Great Commission right here in our backyard. And then just these days with social media and just really like the globalization, how connected, interconnected we all are, especially through like WhatsApp and mm-hmm. Facebook and things like that. So like another beauty is that if we can reach our international friends with the gospel here, they are so connected to their family and their communities back home and their friends that they can reach them through social media mm-hmm. as well. So they can, what we do here is going to affect what happens on the other side of the world.
Yeah.
So
I was hoping, there's a lot. Yeah, I was hoping you'd go there and that we could get into that. We're coming up on the end of the show. We've got just a few minutes left, but real quick before we have to end the show, I want to hear your take on that vision, because you just opened up the door, and I'm glad that we have this opportunity, because we'll do a part one with James. A part two with James, a part three with James, and we'll continue the conversation in the months to come. But James, you just said if we can reach visitor here, the foreign-born international here, they can then become the evangelist to their people. What are you seeing there? What's the vision about that?
I mean, in the past, I mean, there's so many stories of people coming to faith in Jesus. And then, when they would you know, go back home for a wedding, or, you know, they move back home. Yeah, they share the hope that they have in Jesus. But that was like more like a long-term thing, you know, because previously it was something that, you know, they a long distance phone call to India or to China was expensive. Mm-hmm. And so it was something that would be a long-term thing, but it happened. There's some amazing stories of people hearing the gospel through their son or daughter or their niece or nephew that they had sent. But these days, it's more instantaneous. Like I don't think I have a single South Asian friend that doesn't communicate to their family and friends back in South Asia on a daily basis.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And many of them not only are talking via text, but they're actually having like WhatsApp calls or FaceTime calls as well, because now you can do it for free through the internet. The vision is that, you know, they would be sharing sharing that as well.
You know, we've talked about the sovereignty of God to bring them here. And I suspect if we did a survey poll, the vast majority of Christian believers would say, yep, I can accept that God is sovereign and he's bringing the internationals here. Can we have faith that this sovereign God will not only bring them here, but he will rescue them from death and bring them to himself through his son, Jesus Christ? And can we have faith that that is his strategy, is to deposit the gospel in them so that they can become a light to their people? This is God's plan to fulfill the Great Commission. We have churches right here in the Triangle that want to reach the Triangle and change the world. And I can't think of a more specific strategy than to reach the foreign-born international, because when you do, you are reaching their people. You're reaching their homeland. You're literally reaching the other side of the planet with the gospel. And nothing wrong with evangelizing Americans. Let's do it all day long, but let's make sure we include our neighbors from abroad, the foreign-born internationals living here as well. James, that's why you are my hero, because you're championing this, and God is enlarging your camp, and there's still so much more that needs to be done. We need more believers going abroad. We need more believers being called to the Dwell Initiative, like you and Elizabeth have been called to. And, you know, like you and Elizabeth and a handful of others are only scratching the surface to the opportunity for the gospel. And, you know, we could, as a result of this podcast, have 1,000 more families take on the Dwell Initiative calling. Oh, my goodness. That would be so impactful for the gospel.
Yeah. And so many of these families are already living, like they're already living here.
Yes.
I talk to people all the time who just like for their job, or they work in the RTP. So they had no idea that there's this like large international community here. Mm-hmm. And so they were just living here, just doing their thing, you know, fulfilling the American dream or whatever. Mm-hmm. But then they like start asking the question, like, well, what should I be doing? And so a lot of times, like recruiting to Dwell, like a Dwell team, and we could talk more about that in the next.
Yeah, let's dedicate an episode just for Dwell.
Yeah, because like we're always trying to recruit and start. We want to start new teams. We got two teams right now. We got one for the RTP, one for the NC State area. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the people that join the team are those who already, we just meet them and they're already living in that community. And we're like, hey, you know, would you be interested in joining this team? Like you've said you've got a heart for reaching the nations. Well, this team, we're meeting together. We're going to get some training. We're going to pray together. We're going to hold each other accountable, and we're going to actually do things in the community together as well. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's been hard during COVID time, but we're still finding creative ways to engage our neighbors.
Sure.
But then there's others that, you know, they don't currently live in the community, but we say, hey, are you planning on moving in the next year or two? If so, you know, prayerfully consider joining one of these teams and move into the RTP or move into one of these student housing, like apartments, like over at NC State.
Yeah.
The thing is, like what we find is it's a RTP, like cost of living is like a little bit more. run up against this a lot with people or different churches. Actually, a number of our churches in the RTP area, Apex, West Cary, Morrisville, majority of the people from their church, or the majority of the members, actually don't live in the RTP. They drive like 30, 40 minutes or more, because they can't get as much house or as much land for their money, right, as they can in somewhere like Fuquay, Varina, or Holly Springs. And so it's a challenge, really. Like, yeah, we could talk more about this next time, but really do want to challenge our believers and members to think, like, make a small sacrifice. I don't think it's a sacrifice, actually, to say I'm going to live in a nice 1700 square foot townhouse, mm-hmm, you know, like, cause like we lived in where we lived in South Asia, like we have a lot of our friends that their entire house was smaller than my master bedroom.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I don't think it's really that big of a sacrifice, mm-hmm, but you know, from an American perspective, Western perspective, yeah, maybe it's a sacrifice. Consider making that sacrifice. Yes. Say, man, like I just like it's worth, like, you know, maybe having one less bedroom, or one, you know, a little less land to, you know, to live on, mm-hmm, to be, you know, to live intentionally and to let your light shine in a community.
Yeah. James, thank you so much. And we're going to come back with part two on the dwell. We'll let you know when that's going to happen very soon. And James, any final words before we break away here?
Just really appreciate the opportunity mm-hmm, to be on with you guys. Like, I would just say, like, you know, I'm not an expert. Like, I don't think any of us are. I don't think, Kevin, you're an expert. We're all just like, just learning, you know, and we've got so much more to learn. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people just feel like intimidated about the opportunity or just they're like, well, different culture, different language. And they're just like, I don't think I could ever do it. Mm-hmm. I just want to encourage you, just from my background, like I dropped out of high school, used to be, you know, a drug addict, and just I was extremely broken. And if the Lord could use like someone as broken as me, he can use anybody. And yeah, so don't be afraid. I know it might seem like jumping in the deep end, you know, working with the nations, but the Lord is good, and he will give you strength. And yeah, we're not trusting in ourselves anyways. We need to be trusting in him along the way. So
right,
be encouraged.
Thank you so much, James. Thank you. And God bless you, and we'll talk to you again soon.
We're giving away a Starbucks gift card this month to one of our amazing listeners. Go to globalhopeindia.org/dream and fill out the quick free Starbucks form. We'll randomly select a lucky listener, so enter now for your chance to win. Thank you for listening to the Living the Dream podcast, empowering and equipping church staff with an identifiable and measurable strategy for reaching internationals and changing the world. You can help us live the dream by liking, commenting, subscribing to this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. And you can find more resources to empower and equip your church staff at globalhopeindia.org/resources. That's globalhopeindia.org/resources.